It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I can't wait because mine and Carmen Carrion's new book, Freaky Folklore, Terrifying Tales of the World's Most Elusive Monsters and Enigmatic Cryptids, is coming July 16th, featuring the history and lore of terrifying folklore creatures from across the globe, alongside some cool and creepy illustrations. Pre-order today on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookstore, or go to eeriecast.com/freak. The next 1,000 verified pre-orders will get a Freaky Folklore decal and a 3-month subscription code to EerieCast Plus. And all entrants will get a free PDF sneak peek of the Freaky Folklore book. To verify and for more info, go to eeriecast.com/freak.
Redwood Bureau Phenomenon 1605, The Blob.
The Blob.
Threat level, lethal.
Lethal.
In the world of science, there are discoveries that push the boundaries of our understanding and challenge our perceptions of reality. But what happens when these discoveries cross the line from groundbreaking to terrifying? What happens when the pursuit of knowledge unleashes horrors that threaten the very fabric of our existence? As a former agent of the Redwood Bureau, I have seen firsthand the consequences of unchecked scientific ambition. The Redwood Bureau, a clandestine organization self-tasked with investigating and containing anomalous phenomena, has long operated in the shadows, keeping the public blissfully unaware of the nightmares that lurk just beyond the veil of normalcy. But now, one of those nightmares has been unleashed once again. In the late 1980s, a series of bizarre and gruesome incidents rocked the small town of
Redacted,
leaving a trail of death and destruction in their wake. Eyewitness accounts spoke of a monstrous, amorphous creature that consumed everything in its path, leaving nothing of its victims behind. The Redwood Bureau was almost too quick to respond, deploying a team of agents to contain the threat and erase any evidence of its existence. But what they found defied then-current understanding of biology. A shapeless, ever-changing mass of gelatinous flesh, impervious to conventional weapons, and seemingly driven by an insatiable hunger. This entity, classified as RBP-1605 and codenamed The Blob, represented a new and terrifying frontier in the Bureau's ongoing battle against the unknown. Its origins, for now, remain a mystery. But one thing is clear. It, and entities like it, pose an existential threat to humanity, and the Bureau will stop at nothing to contain and exploit them. But as with all secrets, the truth has a way of coming to light. And now, as a whistleblower determined to expose the Bureau's dark underbelly, I have uncovered disturbing evidence that suggests RBP-1605 may be just the tip of the iceberg. In my time with the Bureau, I witnessed countless atrocities committed in the name of science and national security. Innocent lives ruined, entire communities left devastated, all to further the Bureau's agenda of control and exploitation. And through it all, the higher-ups remained silent, content to let the world burn as long as their secrets remained hidden. But no more. The Redwood Bureau's reign of terror must come to an end, and it starts with the truth. In the files that follow, you will find a chilling account of the
Redacted
incident, pieced together from the Bureau's own classified archives. Brace yourself, for when it comes to the Bureau's secrets, the truth is never pretty. But remember, knowledge is power, and in the face of the unknown, it may be our only defense. Stay vigilant and never stop questioning the official story. The Blob is out there, waiting. And more terrifying yet, the Redwood Bureau is always watching.
The campfire crackled, casting a warm glow on the faces of the counselors as they huddled around, sharing ghost stories. Darren, in his acid-washed jeans and neon windbreaker, leaned forward with a mischievous grin.
"And that's the story of Bob the Blob," he declared, his voice echoing through the night.
"Jesus, Darren," one of them said, rolling their eyes.
"Yeah, dude. That was terrible,"
another chimed in, adjusting her scrunchie.
"Oh, come on. Blobs are scary, I'm telling you," Darren defended as a hand rose.
"I got a story,"
Julie's voice cut through the growing discord. The others leaned in, faces illuminated by the dancing flames.
"This is the story of Ghosty Jones,"
she began.
"One night, out on the West Coast, a group of teenagers found an old coal mine. They peered inside, seeking magic and mystery. The tunnels took them deep into the dark, cold mountain. Deeper and deeper they went, until they happened upon something. An old coffin sat squarely in the center of the tunnel. Immediately, the group shivers, cold fear gripping them, not understanding how it could have gotten there. As the group continues onward, one stays behind and lifts the coffin's top."
She pauses momentarily, looking around the campfire at eager faces.
"Inside was a skeleton, calmly resting in its wooden box. On its wrist, a big gold watch. Rings were still on the fingers. With no fear of repercussions, this straggler takes everything they can."
Her story continues into the night, surrounded by friendly faces and the endless expanse of trees. One sits further away from the firelight, calmly hunched over in the bed of a truck while using a headlamp to read over some paperwork. At the top of the pages lies the name, Hot and Fire Campgrounds Counselors, and an array of names stretched down to the bottom. To the side of this list were four other lists, one filled out, but the other three still being worked on. With consideration, this person slowly jots down names on the field trip scouts list. Robert Measle, Billy Hoddenfire, and Darren Bistro. He then continued making the rest of the lists.
"Inside the building, they found broken glass and something illuminated by the moonlight,"
the woman finishes, grabbing her coat and bag afterwards.
What was that the end?"
Darren asks spastically.
"For tonight, you'll have to tune in tomorrow night for the rest,"
she laughs.
"What? Julie, you can finish the story tonight," someone says. "We got no curfew and nobody's arriving until a month from now. We can stay up."
"Yes, Billy, but we still maintain the campground. We have to get up early,"
Julie reminds them. Billy folds his arms, annoyed. Darren nudges him on the shoulder.
"Hey, it's all right. Tomorrow we should be scouting. Could be a long hike," he says with a smile.
Billy nods and grins back.
"Yeah, I guess we should get some sleep," he figures.
The two get up and return to their bunkhouse. A shoddy old shack, groaning as its wood bends with the wind. Glass windows made opaque from ages of neglect, its elderly form warped by sunlight over decades. Inside, three rows of bunks spread across the room. Only one is currently occupied. Darren and Billy slowly inch around the place, careful not to wake their sleeping bunkmate. Their steps were met with minute squeaks from the floorboards, and their motions were gradual and considerate.
just as they finally got into their sleeping clothes and were about to get cozy, a distant uproar seemed to be closing in. Before they could do anything, a bombastic trio surged through the door, their laughter cackling and thunderous. They spoke with intense volume, and their playful conversation awakened the sleeping beast. Very slowly, the sleeping figure rolled over, revealing a massive frame. His voice deep and bassy as he spoke,
"Shut the fuck up and go to sleep,"
before he calmly rolled back over. Darren and Billy knew the voice of the sleeping giant all too well, the third to their musketeers, and an intimidating force to any seeking to disturb either one of them. The loud trio continued talking, though much, much quieter. They moved to the other side of the bunkhouse, going into the showers and generally trying to be hushed. As they climbed into bed and fell asleep, the other buildings continued roaring with activity. In a bunkhouse on the opposite side of the campgrounds, rhythmic beats and raucous music play. Lights flicker through the windows. A group of girls party as the time passes. Some are changing while others are dancing. In between these two bunkhouses is the main house, a beautiful two-story that features a balcony. A light turns on in the highest window, and someone peeks out, glaring at the musical disturbance across the way. A soft breeze turns the leaves. Brilliant sunlight tore through the window as Darren pulls himself from his sheets. He gets up and quickly changes, realizing that everyone else, including Billy, is still asleep. Everyone aside from Robert, who was already taking a brisk shower. Darren grabs his hiking stick and starts gently jabbing Billy until he wakes up. Within an hour, the trio are ready. Darren and Robert stand outside as they await Billy.
"Man, how long does it take to piss?"
Robert asks sarcastically. Darren shrugs and laughs. "I don't know. He's always been like this." Soon enough, Billy appears from inside, dressed in tacky hiking attire, store-fresh boots, a bright orange vest laid over red plaid, khakis, and a trucker's cap. He smiles as the other two laugh.
"Dad bought him for me," he admits.
The trio headed out, Walkmans clipped to their belts and backpacks slung over their shoulders. Billy brought out a map, struggling to keep it steady in the breeze. With the help of Darren, he pinpoints exactly where they need to go and which route to take. Billy laughs and says,
"We can pass through the old mine tunnels. They go right through this mountain."
He turns to Darren and asks, "Wanna check for Ghosty Jones?" Darren gives Billy a mild shove and laughs.
"Dude, that story wasn't even scary,"
Darren insists.
"Yeah, well, still better than Bob the Blob,"
Billy retorts to receive another firm shove.
"I like them both,"
Robert says as he stands between the two.
"But, a blob? Like, is that scary to you?"
Darren responds honestly.
"I mean, yeah. It can be any size, any shape, squeezed through pipes, or anything."
Their voices were quickly overshadowed by the rustling of the surrounding foliage. Wind swept over the green overgrowth. Walls of leaves fluttered as the grass shifted gingerly. Amidst the rocks and green, bleached by the sun's rays, sat a rectangular entry. The area surrounding it was entirely overgrown with weeds and grass gripping rusted metal framework lying across the ground. Billy and his friends approached, nearly tripping over the grounded frame. He looks the entrance up and down, then begins patting his pockets. He continues to do so as Robert asks,
Did you forget something?
Before Billy could respond, Darren clicks on his flashlight, then walks past.
Oh, dang it. I should have brought my light, he says. I didn't think we'd be going through the tunnel.
It was your idea.
Darren looks at him suspiciously. They peer into the tunnel, needing to hunch over in order to pass through the dilapidated entrance. Robert looked at it disbelievingly.
I'm gonna get stuck if I go in there. Y'all can go right ahead.
What do you mean? This'll shave like 30 minutes off the hike,
Billy says.
Don't be a pansy,
Darren mocks. Undeterred, Robert shakes his head and says,
I'll meet you there. I'm going over the hill.
Before strutting back up the hiking trail, Darren sighs and shakes his head. Then he spots a bit of hesitance in Billy.
You're not gonna quit on me too. Come on,
Darren says as he motions for Billy to follow.
I don't know, Darren. I thought it was a good idea at first, but now I'm having second thoughts,
Billy says, watching Darren step deeper into the tunnel. Realizing that he wouldn't be stopping, Billy makes the tough decision to follow his friend, informing him as he catches up.
This isn't the shaft I thought it was. We shouldn't be in here.
Darren sighs again, evidently annoyed.
What makes this rocky tunnel different from the other rocky-ass tunnels?
He asks.
Well, for starters, this isn't just a tunnel. This one's an actual mine shaft,
Billy says. They continue forward.
Just watch your feet, man.
They follow some rails that lead deeper in, mostly down. Eventually, the duo happened upon a minecart stuck in place. A few rocks were ahead of it. As Darren motions to get around it, Billy stops him.
Wait, don't touch anything,
he pleads. For once, Darren halts and looks at him as he asks,
Yeah? Don't touch the cart, seriously. Dad told me if we were ever in here that we shouldn't touch anything,
Billy cautions. Darren gives him a confused look, then glances over at the cart.
What is it?
He asks with bewilderment.
It's a fucking cart. We can squeeze past,
he yells back as he demonstrates. Billy looks back, then back at Darren, before frustratedly conceding and squeezing by the minecart as well.
If it were Robert, then there might be an issue,
Darren jokes.
The difference between a tunnel and a shaft,
Billy starts,
is we can see the other side from the entrance. Tunnels go through things, shafts are connected to mines.
He was about to continue until he saw a mocking gesture from Darren, who was mimicking a mouth moving with his hand. Billy huffs, feeling a little ignored.
Look, if there's a way in, there's gotta be a way out,
Darren says.
That makes no sense. Of course there's a way out. It's back the way we came,
Billy states. The argument continues back and forth, until Darren happens upon a crossroads. Behind them was the way out, a rise in the terrain. But ahead was another rise, beset on either side by two dips where the carts would go. Darren points his flashlight down one of the tunnels. With its light unable to pierce through to the end, he jokingly shouts,
Come get me, Ghosty Jones!
To gauge the echo. Billy, slightly shaken, insists.
We should go. Maybe the way ahead is another exit.
Darren looks at him and asks,
Aw, come on. Don't you want to see what's down?
Only for him to stop suddenly. His eyes grew wide with panic, and the two boys peered into the tunnel as they heard something approaching. Step by step, clad in black. Without hesitation, the two boys begin sprinting their way down the tunnel. With no words, only panicked breathing that stammered with each step, they quickly got out of the darkness, rushing out of the shaft with such speed that they tripped over a barricade The duo slid down a small switchback and landed roughly in some bushes. Their voices returned to them as they questioned each other about what they saw. Before much could be said, they saw a familiar friend. Robert was already there, and he helped the two get up from the foliage. As soon as they were on their feet, they were quick to start their incoherent ramblings.
We saw someone that... We saw something in there,
Darren says spastically.
I saw like a leg step up the tunnel towards us. Dude!
Billy freaks out.
It was dark. We were scared. How the hell did you get here so fast, Rob?
Darren asks. Robert looks at the two of them, a little confused and concerned. Then he tells them.
I took the tunnel.
What?
Billy asks. Where was it?
Up the hill, there was the tunnel y'all went through. Then a tunnel right above it.
Robert calmly recalls.
I could see the exit from the entrance. It was straight and not too cramped.
Billy and Darren start to calm down as they lay their eyes on the mine's main building. Their objective.
Okay, so we go inside and clear it of shit like spiders?
Robert asks as they approach its entrance.
Yeah, we're just here to check the integrity of the place and clean it up a bit.
Billy replies. The double doors open, and inside is an idyllic space. Sunlight beamed from the openings and the sides, highlighting a plethora of vines and weeds that had grown into the walls and floor. Darren noticed something laying on the floor in a box.
Oh, look! Someone left their cassettes here!
He exclaims. Robert joined him in shuffling through the music. Meanwhile, Billy pulled out his notebook. He takes notes, jotting down things he sees, and tries to determine how safe the building is. From a cursory observation, he determines that the main room is safe enough.
Who wants to try the stairs?
Billy asks.
I'll do it. If it can't hold me, it ain't safe.
Robert says.
How's the football thing going for you?
Darren asks, while still rifling through the box of tapes.
It's all right.
Robert admits, while slowly ascending the stairs.
We picked up a win last game, but I'm starting to wonder if it's for me.
Really?
What else would you pursue?
Darren asks.
I mean, genuinely, not trying to sound like a dick.
Robert shrugs his shoulders, walking up, down, and around the staircase.
I don't know. I like music a lot, and I was thinking of getting into that.
The squeaks and groans of the wood hint at its age. But Billy determines it's mostly safe to use the stairs, and walks up them too.
Gonna get a band? Rival Def Leppard?
Darren teases. The two of them laugh a bit before heading up to the second story, where Billy wandered off to.
You still wigging out about what we saw in that mine shaft?
Darren asks Billy. Billy shrugs and says,
I've been keeping a bit of an eye on the exit we took. I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, we were probably just seeing things,
Darren says.
You were so scared, though.
Billy shoves Darren a bit, and the two share a laugh. The upper floor features an office and some sort of storage room. The office is mostly intact, with only one broken window.
Whoa.
Darren stops in the office.
Is that an old Apple II?
He asks.
Yeah, but it doesn't work anymore.
Billy answers from the other room. Darren walks up to the desk, finding not only the broken computer, but a half-full bottle of whiskey still in one of the drawers.
Jackpot,
he says while snatching it.
Hey, Bill?
Robert asks.
What is it?
Billy calls back.
What's this hole in the floor?
The trio convene downstairs, where a supply closet has been replaced by an incredible drop into the earth. The boys seem stunned, peering down into the rocky well. Billy was horror-struck, pondering,
why is this here?
Maybe it's to bring stuff down to the miners?
Darren posits.
Then there'd be a pulley system or something,
Robert says. Billy quickly jots down his notes, then pulls his friends back from the hole while saying, Everyone here is my responsibility, so stay back from that. Darren and Robert don't bother arguing, turning away and walking back to the entrance of the building, where they wait for Billy to finish his assessment.
What's that?
Robert asks Darren, who is obviously concealing something beneath his shirt.
Just a little drink? Want some? He asks, quickly.
Shit, man, you know we'll get in trouble for having that,
Robert says, astounded at Darren. They look around, then back at each other.
One shot?
Robert says finally.
One shot?
Darren asks.
One shot.
They swiftly take a pull from the bottle before hiding it in Robert's backpack. As they finish up, Billy comes out from the mine building.
Okay. We have a lot to report back on. My folks will be very happy you guys helped me out today, Billy states.
We're always here to help, man,
Robert says as Darren nods. The trio begin back over the hill, the sunlight slowly receding into the horizon. As it does, the brilliance of the land is tinted a vague yellow, and swaths of shadow begin to creep around the dense forest. The campgrounds are lively, people running around, doing various tasks. One group rakes the leaves and loose green, heaving the massive bags into a plush pile. Another group picks up stones and smooths out the pathways. Upon every building was a sign indicating its name, glowing in neon as the nighttime grew near. A man walks out of a bunkhouse, checking the sign to make sure it's still ignited. He checks off a list and sighs, looking up at the nearby hill to see the scouting group returning.
Hey,
he says while waving.
How's the building?
Billy shouts down the hill at him.
Building's fine, but we can't let anyone explore inside.
Why is that?
The man shouts back.
I'll tell you in a sec,
Billy responds. He then waves at his compatriots, says goodbye, and books it ahead, walking up to the man and handing him his notebook. Meanwhile, Darren and Robert head back to the bunkhouse. After their hike, the duo found a quiet and empty space, sighing with relief once the silence leaves them in peace. They gradually changed clothes. Darren takes a quick shower, and Robert unpacks his things, finding the bottle of whiskey within his backpack. He takes it out and slips it under Darren's pillow. Within a few hours, story time would commence at the campfire. Only a looming storm cloud would change that. Everyone begins to assume that it's canceled, and instead, they'd have to entertain themselves inside their bunkhouses. Billy appears after a while, seemingly in a good mood. His walk had a jaunt, and he seemed generally peppy.
What's gotten into you?
Robert asks, peering from behind a book.
Nobody else is in here, he says joyously. This is our bunkhouse now.
His words didn't seem to ring for Robert, and Darren was only mildly interested.
What?
Billy asks, perplexed.
We don't have to deal with anyone else tonight.
Robert nods, realizing what he's getting at, and goes back to his book.
Thank God, Darren says. That means it's all ours.
I know. The whole bunkhouse to ourselves,
Billy exclaimed, before Darren reaches under his pillow to reveal the bottle of whiskey.
Oh, that's what you mean,
Billy says with a furrowed brow. Darren happily passes the bottle after taking a pull.
Hey, my dad said no alcohol.
We're 20. We can do what we want,
Darren says excitedly.
I'm only 19 and you're not even 21. Give me the bottle,
Billy demands.
Bill,
Darren stops him. As Billy tries to speak, Darren interrupts him again.
What?
Billy asks, defiantly.
Bill?
Darren says quietly, as he extends his arm to offer Billy a shot once again. Billy shakes his head no, and Darren continues to pressure him. Before things can get heated, they are startled by a sudden crash of lightning. The light bloomed from outside, right next door.
Oh God!
Billy yells.
Damn! I've never seen lightning strike that close before. That was deafening!
Darren exclaims.
We should check on them. I think that hit the other bunkhouse.
Robert says, looking worried. Outside the bunkhouse was a horrible mix of water, wind, and darkness. Rain came down in sheets as the ground filled with dirty pools and puddles. Surrounding the base of the bunkhouse was a muddy pond, one which they walked through in order to reach the neighboring building. At the peak of a brick chimney, they could see a melted lightning rod, only barely clinging to its position. Regrouping at the entrance to the bunkhouse, they determined their next step. Through the downpour of rain and clamor of thunder, Darren could hear Billy saying,
"We need to check on them. I'll go inside."
Yet he misheard and thought Billy was instructing for them all to go inside. As they approached the door, they noticed something off. Banging and clashing, booming like things were being thrown around. A distant yelp beckoned Billy to open the door. The three enter a surreal scene, quiet all along the rows of the bunkhouse. Intermittent lightning illuminating certain areas briefly, with only the persistent thudding of rain accompanied by the continued banging and thrashing. Billy steps forward, realizing that all the bunks were toppled over.
"Anyone home?"
he shouts. More banging from the bathroom, like someone was pounding on the wall.
Hello?
Billy shouts again.
"Hey, are you guys all right? Some lightning hit your bunkhouse and we wanted to make sure everyone was okay."
Billy steps along, finding belongings swept aside. A cassette player with headphones still attached was in pieces along the floor. Someone's suitcase was smashed beneath one of the bunk beds, and the banging from the showers growing steadily more intense. Billy looked behind him to see his friends stepping forward slowly before being stopped.
"Bill?"
Robert says.
"Here, take this."
He hands Billy his flashlight. With a thank you, Billy turns on the light, better witnessing the havoc wrought upon the bunkhouse. Bed frames broken, mattresses all around, and a suspicious stain covering the floor in the center. A gelatinous liquid, sticky and sweet-smelling, covered a coat likely left by one of the campers staying there. More banging on the wall, and a muffled voice that was impossible to distinguish.
"Hello?"
Billy asks as he approaches the door.
"Hello?"
Just before he opens the door, Billy once again asks,
"Is anyone here?"
The door swings open as the latch is yanked from Billy's hand. He screams and falls back as a body starts lurching out, covered in an ooze and reaching for help. The figure seems trapped within something. Billy screams as he sees a vague face beneath the ooze, skin gradually melting away as his flesh is exposed, eyes bloodshot and colorless. The figure twitches a few times while reaching for Billy, then falls limply on the floor. The ooze pulls the motionless form back into itself, taking the body back into the showers as a new puddle forms. Billy gets up and stumbles away, falling repeatedly over the bed frames and loose mattresses. The puddle creeps along the floor, slithering up the frames and across the wreckage towards Billy. His friends grab him by the arms and pull him back, all the way out of the building, before closing the door in a hurry. With evident panic, the boys stop for a moment while Darren peeks through the window. "I don't see it anymore," he yells.
"You ain't gonna see it, dipshit. It's all on the fucking floor,"
Robert exclaims.
"God, the things I saw in there,"
Billy whispers. The trio takes a moment, only for Billy to realize something.
"We need to find my dad,"
he blurts out.
What?
Robert and Darren ask in unison.
"We need to get the fuck out of here,"
Robert adds.
"We can't just leave this thing here. We have to do something," Billy states.
"Yeah, I'll do something. Load up my car and drive away,"
Robert argues.
"I'm with Rob on this one," Darren says.
"How are you going to stop that? We don't even know what it is. Someone else can deal with it."
Before Billy can argue back, Robert tags in.
"Until today, I don't think that anyone knew about big fucking liquid nightmares that shouldn't exist, Billy. We need to save our own skins."
Billy quivers at the word skin, then looks at them.
"We need to tell my dad. Let him know what's happening. Then we can get out of here," he insists. "We can't just leave without a word spoken to anybody. We should at least evacuate the campground,"
Robert huffs, peering through the sheets of falling rain.
"All right, fine. You go tell your daddy about this shit. Me and Darren will get our stuff from the bunkhouse."
Tragedy struck the Hodden Fire campsite today as a chemical spill led to a series of accidents, leaving several dead and many more injured. According to official sources, a tanker truck carrying hazardous materials from a local chemical plant overturned near the campsite, spilling its contents into the surrounding area. Eyewitnesses reported seeing a strange, foul-smelling fog engulfing the area, causing people to experience respiratory problems and skin irritation. The resulting panic and confusion led to several other accidents, with campers and staff alike stumbling and injuring themselves as they tried to flee the area. Emergency services were quick to respond, with hazmat teams working to contain the spill and paramedics treating the wounded. The exact number of casualties is still unknown, but authorities have confirmed that at least 5 people have been killed, with dozens more hospitalized. The Hodden Fire campsite, a popular destination for outdoor enthusiasts and families, has been closed indefinitely pending a thorough cleanup of the affected area. Officials have assured the public that the spill has been contained and that there is no further risk of contamination spreading any further, although the area is quarantined, so be sure to avoid Highway 4 as it's currently blockaded. Investigators are still trying to determine the cause of the tanker truck's accident, but initial reports suggest that driver error may have been a factor. The company responsible for the tanker has yet to make a statement, but a full inquiry into the incident is expected to be launched in the coming days. As the community comes to terms with this tragedy, questions are being raised about the safety protocols and materials being transported through our roads. The owners of the facility have pledged their full cooperation with the investigation and have expressed their condolences to the families of the victims. For now, the focus remains on the well-being of those affected by this horrific event, with support and counseling services being made available to the survivors and the families of the deceased. The Hodden Fire campsite tragedy serves as a sobering reminder of the ever-present dangers in our modern world and the importance of proper safety measures and emergency response protocols. More on this breaking story at 10.
Warning, signal interruption detected.
This episode is sponsored by June's Journey. What is horror to you? Monsters? Murder? Mystery? Well, if human monsters are your thing, June's Journey is the game for you, albeit in a more lighthearted tone. June's Journey is a hidden object game with a thrilling murder mystery set in the roaring 20s. You play as June on the hunt for your sister's murderer. Discover clues through exciting hidden object scenes with beautiful and atmospheric illustrations and music. Victory brings you closer to new plot points and suspenseful answers. When not hunting for clues, you can customize your own luxurious estate island with gardens, buildings, and decor. Or chat and play with or against other players too, in the Detective Club, where you could even put your skills to the test in the Detective League. June's Journey is both relaxing and fun to play. With my busy schedule, I find it's the perfect game to pick up and play whenever I've got a free moment. It doesn't demand too much time, and it's pretty satisfying solving puzzles quickly and unlocking new clues. Can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Signal connection restored.
My name is Wheeler, and if you're reading this, it's because I made it out. Not everyone does in this line of work, especially not in the Redwood Bureau. It was the mid-1980s, a period thick with the tension of the Cold War and shadowed by espionage that stretched even into the hidden corners where we operated. The Bureau didn't just dabble in the shadows, they mastered them. I was never officially recruited. I was chosen. My military background blended with a knack for biochemistry had marked me for a different kind of service, one far removed from the public eye. It was during a seemingly ordinary lecture at a university when Peyton, a senior agent whose face told stories of 1,000 covert operations, approached me. His demeanor wasn't inviting. It was commanding. "You don't choose the Bureau, son," Peyton had said, his voice gravelly with authority. "The Bureau chooses you, and it's decided you're needed." That was my initiation. No forms, no interviews, just a stark introduction to a new reality. Peyton, who I later learned was one of the Bureau's most respected operatives for handling the messiest cases, became my mentor. He was a man of few words, but each one was weighed down with the gravity of his experience. Under his guidance, I was to learn not just how to react, but to anticipate, not just to follow orders, but to understand the unspoken ones. Our mission that led us to the Hoddenfire campsite was shrouded in urgency. The campsite had been sealed off following preliminary reports of an incident that was as bizarre as it was deadly. The official cover-up story fed to the public involved a chemical spill, a convenient tanker truck accident that explained the expected environmental and human damage. "Remember, Wheeler, we're not the heroes in shining armor here," Peyton's words cut through the hum of our vehicle as we approached our destination. "We're the ones scrubbing the grime so it doesn't stain. Keep your head down, follow my lead, and maybe you'll get to write one of these reports too." As we prepared, I was introduced to weapons and containment gear that looked like they belonged on the set of a futuristic film rather than our van. The Bureau was years ahead technologically, mostly because they needed to be. What we were dealing with wasn't something that could be neutralized with standard arms. Peyton briefed me on Redwood Bureau phenomenon 1605, the blob, a creature that seemed to defy biological norms, capable of corroding and absorbing organic and inorganic matter with terrifying efficiency. Our ride was tense, passing the blockaded Highway 4, a stark reminder of control and the lengths the Bureau went to maintain the veil of normalcy for the public. It was clear, then, that joining the Bureau wasn't about public service in the traditional sense. It was about preserving a reality that the public could handle, away from the nightmares we were about to face. Peyton checked his gear one last time, his expression unreadable. "Stay sharp, rookie," he muttered as we headed towards the chaos that awaited us at Hoddenfire campsite. As the Bureau SUV rolled through the final barricade, the surreal silence of the Hoddenfire was deafening. The kind of silence that screams. Peyton and I, along with a team of four other agents, geared up in silence, the gravity of our mission weighing down every movement. This was not just another containment job. This was a lethal threat-level phenomenon, a brutal introduction to the horrific anomalies the Bureau kept under wraps. The campsite was a nightmarish scene. Trees stripped bare, their bark disintegrated as if acid had washed over them. Tents collapsed and half dissolved into the soil that now bubbled and seethed with unnatural life. The stench of decay was overwhelming, a potent mix of chemical sharpness and the rot of organic matter. "Visuals up, everyone. Don't touch anything without scanning it first," Peyton instructed, his voice calm but firm over the comms. We wore specialized visors that provided real-time data overlays, scanning for biological and chemical anomalies. Every step was calculated, every move recorded. In the Bureau's fight against the unknown, data was as vital as ammunition. The center of the chaos was the blob itself, a pulsating mass of what appeared to be viscous, semi-transparent gel. It undulated rhythmically, expanding with each pulse, absorbing the remnants of tents, equipment, and horrifically, wildlife that had wandered too close. The air around it shimmered with a cocktail of volatile chemicals, the byproducts of its digestion. The creature wasn't just consuming, it was reshaping the environment around it. The ground near the blob was cratered, dotted with pools of acidic secretions that hissed and steamed. Trees near the blob bore the scars of its feeding, their wood softened and warped, branches hanging limp as if in defeat. "Containment team, positions. We're going to try the alloy nets first," Peyton directed, moving towards the equipment truck with a practiced ease. We followed, hearts pounding, pulling out the containment gear, a high-tech alloy net designed to constrict and neutralize biological threats. As we approached, the blob seemed to sense our presence. It convulsed violently, sending out waves of gelatinous limbs that slapped wetly against the ground. These limbs were not just offensive weapons, but sensory organs tasting the air, searching for new sources of nutrients. Agent Collins was the first to deploy the net, but the blob reacted instantaneously, its body vibrating as it emitted a low, guttural sound that resonated through the ground. It was a sound of distress, but also of warning. The net sizzled and smoked as it came into contact with the blob's acidic surface, ultimately failing to contain it.
"Switch to Plan B! Cryocannons now!"
Peyton's shout cut through the chaos as the blob's limbs lashed out, striking Agent Jensen. The appendage, resembling a grotesque amalgamation of gel and acid, wrapped around him with a squelch of deadly precision. His scream cut short as the blob's acidic secretion began dissolving his protective suit and flesh, was a brutal reminder of the stakes. I grabbed a cryocannon, my hands slick with sweat and fear, and aimed at the convulsing mass. Peyton and I unleashed a torrent of liquid nitrogen, the cold mist enveloping the blob in a frosty embrace. It shuddered under the icy assault, its rhythmic pulsing slowed as the frost seeped deeper into its gelatinous body. Yet, our momentary triumph faltered as smaller blobs detached from the main mass, each one a pulsating sphere of hunger and destruction.
"Containment breach! We need backup!"
My voice crackled over the comms, desperation seeping through. As Peyton attempted a rescue, diving towards what remained of Jensen with a medical kit, it was too late. The agent was unrecognizable, half his body consumed and absorbed by the blob's corrosive touch. The battlefield was pandemonium. Agents dashed about, launching more alloy nets and firing cryo cannons at the multiplying blobs. Agent Michaels, attempting to flank a smaller blob, was suddenly overwhelmed. The blob, faster than its size suggested, enveloped him. His muffled cries echoed briefly before being extinguished under the blob's crushing embrace. Night stretched into a relentless fight for survival. Each agent was a whirlwind of activity, combating the ever-splitting blob progeny. The ground turned slick with the mix of chemical ooze and blood, boots slipping as we maneuvered through the mire. The smell of charred flesh and acid hung heavy as some agents resorted to flamethrowers, the air crackling with the heat of desperate defiance. By dawn, exhaustion bled through our ranks, but the original blob was finally subdued, encased in a containment unit Peyton had engineered on the fly. The smaller blobs not destroyed were contained as well, but the landscape bore the scars of the night's horrors. Trees petrified into grotesque statues, the ground a pocked testament to the battle. "We'll need to document everything," Peyton said, his voice rough with fatigue as he surveyed the weary agents. The cost had been grievous, lives lost, minds forever scarred by the ordeal. The rookie agents, myself included, were silent, our initial bravado replaced by a dawning realization of the grim realities of our duty. "What are they?" I managed to ask, nodding towards the containment units, where the blobs, now subdued, still pulsed ominously. "They're a threat," Peyton replied, his voice resolute as he surveyed the containment units. "A threat to everyone you know and love. It's not about understanding them. It's about containing them." As we packed up to leave, the early morning light cast long shadows over the campsite, doing little to ease the chill that had settled over us. The drive back was quiet, each of us ensconced in our own reflections, processing the events and their severe implications. I realized then, as the campsite receded into the distance, that our battles were not just against the anomalies themselves, but also against the unpredictability of what we might unleash. The true burden of our work lay in the constant vigilance and readiness to act, ensuring the safety not just of ourselves, but of the unsuspecting public. The debriefing back at the Bureau was as grueling as the encounter itself. Around the polished oak table, the remaining members of our team recounted each moment of the night with clinical precision. The higher-ups listened, their expressions unreadable, as we detailed the sequence of events that led to the containment of the blob and its progeny. In the sterile light of the debriefing room, the horrors of the night seemed almost surreal, but the scars they left on us were undeniably real. Peyton, with his usual composure, presented the retrieved samples of the blob sealed within biohazard containers and reported on the potential for further study and the necessity of increased field readiness. "Our objective remains clear," Peyton stated firmly. "Contain and control. What occurred last night at Hoddenfire campsite is a stark reminder of the unpredictability we face. These entities, these anomalies, are manifestations of variables we have yet to fully understand. But understand them we must, if we are to prevent such occurrences from escalating." The room was silent as the implications of his words sank in. It was more than just about cleaning up after unexpected breaches. It was about the very essence of our role at the edge of human knowledge and experience. The higher-ups nodded, their demeanor approving, yet wary. "Good work, Agent Peyton, and thank you, Agent Wheeler, for your bravery and quick thinking," one of the senior directors commented. "This incident will be logged as a critical event. Further investigations and adjustments to our operational protocols will be considered. We need to ensure that our agents are not just responders, but guardians against the unknown." As the meeting concluded, I felt a mixture of pride and unease. Pride in having stood fast against such overwhelming odds, and unease at the thought of how many more such anomalies might be out there, lurking unseen, waiting for their moment. Leaving the Bureau's fortress-like headquarters, I looked up at the imposing structure that housed so many secrets. The weight of my badge felt heavier than ever. The job was far from just a job. It was a commitment to facing the abyss, to guarding the thin line between chaos and the order of our everyday lives. And as I walked away, the first rays of dawn breaking over the horizon promised a new day, but also reminded me that the darkness was never too far away, always waiting, always watching. The fight was far from over. In fact, it had only just begun.
In the wake of the redacted incident, the Redwood Bureau moved swiftly to contain the fallout and bury the truth. The official story, carefully crafted by the Bureau's disinformation specialists, painted a picture of a tragic but isolated event, a freak accident stemming from a chemical plant that claimed a handful of campers' lives. But the reality, as these leaked files always reveal, is far more disturbing. RBP-1605, or the Blob as it has come to be known, represents a level of threat that even the Bureau's top scientists struggle to comprehend. Its ability to rapidly consume organic matter and adapt to its surroundings make it a formidable and unpredictable adversary. More troubling still is the fact that despite extensive research, the Bureau has been unable to determine the creature's origins or true nature. Some within the Bureau speculate the Blob may be the result of an illicit bioweapons program gone wrong, while others believe it to be of an extraterrestrial origin. Regardless of its genesis, one thing is clear. The Blob is unlike anything the Bureau has ever encountered before. In response to this new threat, the Bureau has long since implemented strict containment protocols and assembled a task force dedicated to studying and neutralizing the threat RBP-1605 presents. However, recent events have called into question the effectiveness of these measures. The appearance of the Blob in the ill-fated Doldrums facility, as detailed in a previous leak, suggests the Bureau was likely experimenting with the entity in an attempt to harness its destructive potential. The disastrous outcome of that ongoing disaster has claimed the lives of countless Bureau personnel and those imprisoned within the Doldrums, and only underscores the folly of their endeavors. More disturbing still are the hinted rumors of other entities in the Bureau's possession. Some reports seem to suggest that the Blob may just be one of many such creatures, all part of some larger insidious pattern. As a former agent privy to the Bureau's darkest secrets, I can attest to the fact that RBP-1605 is nowhere near an isolated case. The Bureau's history is littered with instances of reckless experimentation and disregard for human life, all in the pursuit of power and control. But as this incident and the Doldrums fiasco have shown, that power comes at a terrible price paid in others' blood. The Blob and other entities like it represent an existential threat to humanity, one that the Bureau may ultimately be powerless or unwilling to quell. It is my hope that by bringing their secrets to light, we can hold the Redwood Bureau accountable for its actions and prevent further atrocities from being committed in the name of self-serving ambitions. But the battle is far from over. The Blob is likely once again out there, unleashed upon an unsuspecting world. And as long as the Bureau continues to operate in the shadows, no one is truly safe. Stay vigilant and never stop fighting for the truth. The future of our world may depend on it sooner than you think.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.